So last week we discussed the mitzvah of Pirivya, of having children. We discussed the mitzvah of Lashavis, the mitzvah, the Rabbanon, the rabbinic mitzvah of populating God's world, which comes from the Nevi'im. We discussed the that this secondary mitzvah of having children beyond the fulfillment of Pirivya, which is a boy and a girl, and is also formulated as the mitzvah of Al Tanach Yadecha, that even after one's had the children, and fulfill the mitzvah, the rice, the biblical commandment of a boy and a girl. Teres, the Shlomo Melech said, "Baboyk is rad zerecha, ule'er v'altanach yodcha," when she continue having children later on. We explained that there's a mitzvah as well, in addition to the deraisa of populating God, of having children, and the derabbanon, from the Kabbalah, of having more children. There's also a concept that whenever a pregnancy occurs, and of course whenever a child is born, so that increases the speed of Mashiach, and it's another reason why Svarim say that there's a mitzvah in having larger families. So we discussed last week that given all of these mitzvahs, that they're mitzvahs asay in different levels, so there is an overarching principle of Zrizin Makdimin L'mitzvahs, that we do mitzvahs with speed, with alacrity, as soon as we can. And we explain that Zrizos comes up in two different formulations, or two different formats. One is the idea that we are always ours to do every mitzvah. And we learn that from Avraham Avinu, who was quick and eager to do the Akedas Yitzchak. And then it could be that when it comes to the mitzvah of Pir V'Rivya, there could be an additional mitzvah of zrizus. It could be a stricter form of zrizus, because the mitzvah itself is one that has no time constraints at all within the Torah. So the Chazanish suggested it could be that when there is a mitzvah that needs time constraints, then that's an additional mitzvah or an additional concern of zrizus. The difference being that by not taking care of the mitzvah with the eagerness, with at the earliest opportunity, that which could be a form of bitul mitzvah. So even though the mitzvah having children is a positive commandment, if one would postpone it, it's conceivable, there'd be physicians who would say that by not taking care of it in an efficient or speedy fashion, so one is actually held responsible for omitting the mitzvah. And then we outlined last week that there could be various reasons why we would not be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Pir V'Rivya, not be able to do it as soon as possible. There could be health reasons. Those could be both physical or psychological. There could be physical concerns. There could be anything from life-threatening concerns. There could be concerns that a woman may have which become exacerbated when one is pregnant, and therefore one would be allowed to postpone having children to the best possible situation. There could be psychological concerns of being under significant stress, and all of that would be one reason why we may have to postpone having children. We have to postpone having a second child, perhaps. We discussed the issue of spacing, that once a woman has a child, so then one is not obligated to have another child until one is back to one's pre-pregnancy strength, and until one is still feels well and healthy and fully functioning. And we discussed the concept of spacing for the sake of the children. We discussed Rav Henkin's approach and Rav Moshe's rejection of Rav Henkin's approach, which is set the various times. Then we discussed the importance or the concern of spacing after we've had several children. And now we want to focus this evening on after we've said that the overarching mission is to have children, and then there are reasons that would make sense that one would be allowed to postpone or space. Again, each situation depends on the details of that particular situation. Then the question that we've left to discuss this evening is, and this is part two of the discussion of family planning, is how would one go about spacing? How would one go about postponing having children? Now, again, I want to be very careful over here. We opened up last week by pointing out that these areas of halacha, there was great concern about discussing them in any kind of public forum, because sometimes in a public forum, so the people are take broad principles and apply them perhaps inappropriately. And therefore the question was raised whether it should be discussed at all in a public forum. We pointed out that Rav Moshe was against it initially, and then later on Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky thought that it was an important thing to discuss. I think one of the concerns that I would have about discussing the part two is that part two should not, the fact that we're discussing part two should not mean that we have to take for granted that it is all that it's important to space. In other words, we pointed out there could be, I would like to put part two in the context of where there's a very serious reason to space. Sometimes we buy into ideas that are common in the culture around us, and they may not be necessary. But since the culture is so stresses these ideas, so we sometimes buy into them without thinking whether, in fact, they apply to ourselves or not. And this comes up in many, many situations. It comes up with the area of spacing. Not every family needs to have a space. Not every mother needs to have a space. Not all children need to have spacing. We sometimes buy into these ideas and take it for granted. So that's a very serious concern that one has to have in discussing part two that we'll discuss this evening. These are always very, very weighty concerns, and they always are very individual, very situational, and discussed with a very significant gravity. Anytime we tinker with any part of Kadosh Baruch Hu's nature, and certainly this area, and these brachos having children, we'll get back to that later on. But it's very important as an opening caveat to say that just because we're going to discuss this issue of part two, when there is a reason to postpone having a child, what methods are available, it's important that that should not set up a mindset that this is the derech hamelech, this is the right, this is the way that everybody should go. Not at all. Not at all. The derech hamelech, the initial position should be that we should take things naturally and take things spontaneously. Then there are situations that come up which require some kind of intervention. So let's again put this into the context where there's a health reason for postponing having a child. Where there's a health reason, again, it could either be an extreme physical health reason, extreme psychological, it could be a lesser health concern. So then the question comes up, well, what's available in terms of postponing and not having a child? How does one get in the way of the natural process? So this raises, this could raise an entirely new issue. If a couple would decide to abstain, so that we would discourage that very strongly. Torah would discourage it. Torah would discourage it because abstaining just creates greater frustration both from husband and wife, and that kind of approach could lead to being nichshal, to slipping in some of the more chomedic kind of isur. And it could lead to people having different kinds of fantasies, which are not osir, and which are unhealthy. We know that the Torah puts a high value on chibur, on physical relations between husband and wife. The whole Taras HaMishpacha is in order to, according to the Gemara, needed to enhance the pleasure of husband and wife. We know that the Bnei Eli, the children of Eli, were heavily censured because they sometimes kept the woman who brought a korban, they sometimes kept her near Shiloh, or in Shiloh, really in Shiloh, and did not speed up the process and allow her to bring the korban and get back home. So the Bnei Eli were heavily censured. And this brought to their downfall, ultimately, that they would, because of their own concerns, they would sometimes keep a woman waiting and staying over in Shiloh, not getting back home. So the idea of abstaining is not an idea that we would ever encourage, and it certainly can be very, very difficult in the Shalom Bayis. Question is, what about a partial abstinence, which is what is the different ways of referring to this. In the literature, it's often referred to as the rhythm method. What it primarily is to try to figure out when ovulation is taking place and abstain for a few days around ovulation. This, all of these things that we'll mention now in the next few minutes, one would only adopt any of these things in discussion with the doctor to make sure that one gets it right. So this would seem to be a halachically benign approach, to figure out when ovulation is taking place and then to abstain for a few days around ovulation. Then we have not really introduced any new concept. We discussed last week the mitzvah of Pirvei Ribya. We discussed that there might be a situation when one is released from the mitzvah of having children. We discussed last week that one could be released temporarily from the mitzvah of Zeruzah of doing it as soon as possible. So if one has this partial or periodic kind of abstaining, so then one is simply working with that principle. I'm released from the mitzvah, so therefore we'll abstain around peak fertility time. The rhythm method used to be done in a very, very primitive way, and that's why the common comment about the rhythm method was when you call a woman several months after using the rhythm method, you call her pregnant. That was, but nowadays it's a little bit more sophisticated because there are ways of being able to identify ovulation times, whether it's the temperature charts or whether there's a new approach that has been approved, not in America yet, it's approved in, I think, in Canada and parts of Europe to use, and it will probably come to America very soon, to identify ovulation through various dipsticks. There are various ovulation kits that are available in America, but not really geared for this purpose, but they can be used. And then one would suggest to figure this out, and it's depending on one's method, it could be a little bit expensive when using the kits. One uses the temperature charts, obviously not expensive at all. And so that would be one approach which does not introduce any new concerns. And again, the reason that this is not a method of choice for a couple that wants to pursue having a child is because if it's carried out perfectly, then it has a 2-3% failure rate. Right, but if it's not done perfectly, if it's done in all of these methods, so the literature gives two different numbers. One number is if it's done perfectly, what are the chances of conceiving? And then when one looks at a population who's using it, what is the numbers that actually come up? So here it's about 20% of couples who use different forms of the rhythm method would have a child in that as well. So if we are looking at a couple who's, we're not really sure, they already have fulfilled the mitzvah of Pirvei Ribya, they already have two children, a boy and a girl, they're not really so, they're a little bit concerned that maybe they're not ready for another child, so then there's some ambiguity. All right, so then this could be a possible method. On the other hand, if we're talking about the case that we opened up with as a couple who is, where there is a physiological or a psychological concern, that means that we really don't want this couple to conceive, so then this method becomes a little bit concerning. So arranging the different methods in halachic concern, probably the next method is either the pill or the spermicide. Why is that? Because what we're up against over here, and this is important to appreciate, is the concern of hotzoas zera levatola, of ashchosa zera, wasting or ruining or destroying zera, destroying semen. The wasting semen, ashchosa zera, or hotzoas zera levatola, is seen as a very severe concern. I say severe concern when I use a word, aveira, chet, because it's seen as a serious chet. there's a wide range of positions as to exactly what is the chait. Is it Nisa Deiraisa? Do we learn it from the Dor HaMabul that Kadosh Baruch Hu criticized the Dor HaMabul? Do we learn it from Erva Onan? Do we learn it? Is it some chait that comes out of the denial of the mitzvah of Pirvei Ribya? There's a lot of discussion. And is the severity of the chait based on Kabbalistic texts? There's a wide range of discussion of exactly what is the nature of the Aveira of Atzoa Zer L'Tov. All we know is we have many texts, non-halachic texts, that say it's a very serious issue. That Chazal understood from the Ribbono Shalom, from various texts, that it's a very serious issue. And on the other hand, again, there's a wide range. Is it Deiraisa, the Ribbono, is it Bitul Asay? However, what we have to understand is that the prohibition of Hotzah Zera, of wasting semen, is not what it sounds like. The prohibition of Hotzah Zera, of wasting semen, is really the prohibition of having an unusual form of relations, of not having relations, kederech kolores. How do we know this? Because we know, and this comes up many times in the text, the Rishonim discuss it, and the Achronim discuss it, Ramesh has a tshuva on it, that we know that when a woman is pregnant, she's not going to conceive another child, but the couple is encouraged to have relations. When a woman is nursing, she's not going to conceive. The couple's encouraged to have relations. When a woman is, postmenopausal, so we encourage the couple to have relations. If, rachmana litzlan, a woman had to have some kind of surgery that would make it impossible to have a child, the couple should still have relations. So we see that having relations, the mitzvah of ona, is not the around that the Iser of Itzah Zerah Levatola is not, it's not a prohibition of providing semen in a situation which will not lead to having a child. That's not the way to define it. The way to define it is that as long as one's having relations in the normal fashion, then that is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Ono, the mitzvah of husbands and wives to be together, the providing pleasure to each other. That's what we call Bia Kederech Kol Ha'aretz, the way people have relations. And Hotzah Zera, in that case, services the couple, it services the mitzvah of Ona. That's not called Hotzah Zera Levatola. Hotzah Zera Levatola, again, is not seen as whether the Zera will lead to procreation. Hotzah Zera Levatola is seen as if the Chibur for relations are done in a way which is deemed to be unnatural, not the regular way of having relations. That's Hotzah Zera Levatola. So therefore, the rhythm method doesn't intervene at all with relations. The pill does not intervene with relations. The spermicide, according to most records, does not significantly intervene with relations. The spermicide mostly slows down the sperm or creates some kind of chemical reaction that the uterus is not so compatible with implantation. So the spermicide also is seen as a fairly benign form of a contraceptive that doesn't really come up against Hotzah Zera L'Tov because relations are absolutely natural. The range of effectiveness with spermicides is anywhere between 6% to 26% of people using it will conceive. 6% if it's used perfectly with all the instructions, and 26% is when it's in the actual population. There are doctors that indicate that if one would use, and again, it's always only with the direction of a doctor, use the higher doses and place it in a deeper fashion, that it might be more successful than the numbers of 25 to 30% failure rate. The downside is it sometimes will cause some kind of an infection for certain individuals, certain people are allergic to it. But that is, again, that would be the next step that we would take, either the spermicide or the pill, for this couple that have to postpone having another child for health reasons. So we would say that this does not get in the way of relations, and therefore it's not a violation of what Hotzah Zera L'Tov. So once again, it's still in the box of Bitul Pirvei Ribya, which would be permitted in this case. The oral pill is the next method of preference. Because, once again, relations per se are done entirely naturally, and they don't, since it doesn't interfere, it just it's not a violation of Hatzah Zer Levatola in any way at all. Should, if the pill is used 100% accurately, we're not taking it late or early, then apparently there's a 0.1% of the conceiving. The population using it has a 5%. There are different reports. I've seen different reports on that. Some have a much more significant, but somewhere 5% of the population who uses oral contraceptives. This is assuming that once the doctor has gotten the right combination of estrogen and progesterone, it will conceive. And in the family of oral contraceptives, there are all the other forms of contraceptives that chemically affect the endocrine system, whether it's using various patches, whether it's some kind of injection, whether it's some kind of insert or something. So these are all, whether it's the ring, they're all alpidin, they're all the same, right? Personally, I'm very nervous with any kind of implant or any kind of injection where you lose control and make it irreversible. And the reason is the following, because one of the concerns that comes up in using the pill is one concern is, and this is also very important to follow through with the doctor, is that not everybody is the candidate for the pill. That it has to be a very serious discussion with the doctor, with his family history, and one's history of one's menstrual history, to make sure that one is a candidate for the pill. That's number one. Number two is sometimes when we fool around with the endocrine system, whether it's the regular pill or whether it's the mini pill that is compatible with nursing, so sometimes that will have an impact on the on staining. And here's an important aside. Now, sometimes it'll have an impact on the staining, but that is not a reason for halakhic purposes to go off the pill. In other words, just as a slight comment and aside about the taras mishpacha, if the staining is extremely minimal and we catch it on and colored undergarments, and we catch it on even on tissue and toilet paper, so then that might be aggravating, it might be jarring, but al pidin, that would not make a woman into a nida, and we should continue using the pill or the patch in that case. On the other hand, if the staining becomes significant, so then obviously that's not an option that we can work with. Then it becomes a bit like a flow or something. It becomes, that would be a problem, sure. That would be a problem. And again, with the pill, there are different balances, estrogen and progesterone, that they can be tried out. The same thing with the mini pill, with the Micronor. There are different balances that can be worked out. And the patch carries with it a side issue, which I think should be negotiable, and that is it has to be removed when one goes to mikveh. I say it has to. I think it's negotiable, and you have to discuss it with your physician. Is because my information is that I've received. I've heard both concerns, but I seem to understand that the patch can be removed and another patch can be put on. And that will not interfere with the contraceptive effect. But again, these things you have to discuss with the physician. But that's something to be concerned about, obviously, or to think about before using the patch method, to make sure you've discussed with the doctor the importance of taking it off when one goes to mikveh. The same thing with the ring method, I would be concerned, although it's very new, we have to do more research, that it would be get in the way of doing bedikos. I would not be concerned in terms of mikveh, because it's, from my understanding, it's implanted fairly deeply. But I would be concerned from the whether, and again, I don't think that this has been fully evaluated, but I would be concerned that it could get in the way of doing bedikos, and obviously to take it in and put it out constantly would defeat one of the major advantages of the ring. So that's the, so these methods, the spermicide and the pill, they do not open up a new issue. They're still the old issue. Am I released from the mitzvah of Pirei Ribia? Is the reason why we're considering going on a contraceptive, is that reason justify pushing off having fulfilling the mitzvah of peribia, or pushing off fulfilling the mitzvah of l'shevis or al-tanach yodcha? The next group, the ones that we are very, very hesitant to suggest, unless it's a very, it's an important reason, is are begin to, they open up the issue of Otsoa Zera Lamatola, because they open up the issue of whether we're interfering with chibur, with relations, to the extent that we have to have a very, very strong reason to do so. Right? That's what I'm trying to describe, is that when one asks the shayla, when one asks the question, when sits down with the Rav to discuss whether one can be in a contraceptive, the Rav is always looking at two separate issues. Issue number one is this, do we have a reason over here to postpone the mitzvah of procreation on the biblical, on the rabbinic level, right? And that would be evaluated differently. We would be much more, there is more room to move if we're talking about the rabbinic level. Right? And then the next question that the rabbi has to think about is, all right, so the rabbi feels that this would be a reason to be on a contraceptive, but now to figure out, are we going to be brushing up against Hotzor Zer Levatola? So until now, what we've described until now, we're not brushing up against Zer Levatola. When it comes to the pill, I would mention as well that we mentioned discussing with the doctor whether one's a candidate for the pill. So it has to also keep in mind that there may be some health issues that lurk together with the pill. The different rabbis have different approaches about health concerns that are not validated by the literature. In other words, there might be anecdotal health issues. I don't know. So these are things that have to be discussed with a doctor. I'm very respectful if a person says, you know, the literature says that this medication is 100% okay, but I'm nervous about it. So I personally, because we do see that things come out with time and with more studies, so if a person says to me, I'm uncomfortable, it could be that the pill, by the way, doesn't agree with people. The pill could be uncomfortable, it could be physically uncomfortable. People may have difficulty taking the pill. And so that's also rules that out as a possibility. But a person may say, and that everybody has to make their own decision, that they are just uncomfortable. They're concerned that medical science is not concerned, but they're a more nervous kind of person. So I would think that I would be respectful of that. I think we've seen enough that we could be respectful of that and say that a person's nervous about it. So then we have to go on to the next group. The next group, these are, again, I'm not saying that these violate Hatzos HaLotala, but they open up the issue of Hatzos HaLotala. Because once we're talking about the diaphragm, or once we're talking about the cervical cap, or the sponge, any of these methods, the sponge is not readily available at all. I think it's not available at all nowadays in America. When I see the cervical cap, interestingly enough, is apparently is still available, but very, very hard to get. You have to be more aggressive to get that. So, but the these methods, about these, there's a machlokas about these methods. In other words, there are those poskim who say that the moment one puts a physical barrier in, the diaphragm, the cervical cap, so the moment there's a physical barrier, that is already a problem of Otsoas Zera Levatola. That makes chibur unnatural. And there are other rabbanim who say, number one, the cervical cap really does not get in the way of relations. The diaphragm, yesh v'yesh, the different ways of looking at it. And then, that's one area of debate. The other area of debate is that whether when the need, there's a position amongst poskim. Position amongst poskim that when there is a significant need to use a diaphragm, then that becomes the normal way of having relations. In other words, again, that's the bolt around which the whole discussion revolves. We said Otsoa Zera Levatola is having relations in an unnatural way. All right. For a healthy couple who don't have children or are healthy and ready to have more children, so using a diaphragm is an unnatural way of having relations, and therefore it might be a violation of Otsoa Zera Levatola. for a couple, let's take an extreme example, for a woman for whom the doctors have said this woman cannot conceive, let's say take an extreme example, it's dangerous for her to conceive, right? And because it's dangerous, therefore the doctors say we have to use maybe several methods, and maybe she's not a candidate for the pill, so we have to use something more than the spermicide. So then then for that couple, using the diaphragm may be kederach kol aretz. That's normal relations for that couple. So it's around that logical step that the issues revolve. Number one, does the Rav fall in line with the position that says, that accepts this approach of Chaim Moser Grzeszewski's position? And number two, is the need severe enough that we can say that this is an average couple would handle this situation with contraception, right? So for example, let's say a frivolous case. Let's say take a case where, a woman is Baruch Hashem healthy, and the couple is healthy, and they're happily married, and they have no stresses, b'chule, b'chule, and it's been 4 or 5 years since their most recent child, and they have one child at home, and she wants to wait to have 6, 7 years between the two. So it's a very frivolous case. So then we would say that this is not, that to use the diaphragm in that case is not kederach kol aretz. People would not usually react to this kind of situation by having a contraceptive. On the other hand, one could argue, and again, this is always part of the thinking, I just want you to see what goes into the decision. One could argue that if a situation where a woman is, as we mentioned, it would be unhealthy for her to conceive, so then we could evaluate, well, this is kederach kol aretz. This is the normal way to respond to this situation. So that is the issue when it comes to the diaphragm, the cap. The cap, again, in my mind, is preferred because it does not get in the way of chibur, whereas the diaphragm, I would think, does get in the way of chibur. The downside of the diaphragm and the cap are both that they could be uncomfortable, that they can get in the way of chibur and take away some of the intimacy of chibur. And there is another issue which comes up, one has to be aware of this, that sometimes the diaphragm or the cap rub against the vaginal area and create the sore, and then dum comes out on the diaphragm or the cap. So we have a halacha that if blood would come out and anything inserted inside, we have to look at that. We don't know where the dum comes from. So that the suffix deraisa, the dum coming internally, and therefore it can make a woman into a nida, or the dum coming externally. That's always a very serious shaila. So that is, and that can create some aggravation. So that means that if we do find some dum on the diaphragm, again, if one isn't expecting it, there's no obligation to look. But if we do find some dum in the diaphragm, then we'll usually have to go to the gynecologist and be examined to see whether we can find some kind of sore and allow the couple to be together. But that alone is aggravation. Finding the dum is aggravation. Having to deal with that is aggravation. And then if the doctor cannot find the sore, because these things are often very, very small and heal over very quickly, so then we are perhaps, it has to be a very weighty decision, looking at at becoming a nida again. So that is the downside, I would say. Again, I don't think it's a reason per se, but if it happens once, then it might be a reason to discontinue. So that really exhausts the options, and that's the concern of what saw, is there was anything more severe than the diaphragm, so that would only be considered in the most, most extreme situations of the Rahman al-Utslan. Now, so that's that's part two. Part 2B is a couple is, make it easy that for health reasons, a couple is told they cannot have any more children. Let's say, Rahman al-Utslan, a woman or a husband, whatever it is, they're in a situation where it would be unhealthy for them to have more children, unhealthy for the child to have more children, to be unhealthy for another child to be born. So then the question comes up whether the couple is allowed to have a surgical procedure done in order to avoid having any more children. It's called halacha sirus. Sirus is either for men or for women to do something that would surgically remove the possibility of having more children. So this is very important to be aware of, because we never discuss these things. We don't discuss these things in school. We don't discuss these things. So people sometimes come up against this question without at all being prepared to know that it's also to have serious. It's also for a man to have to be surgical, to undergo surgery in order to that he could not have any more children. And it's also for a woman to undergo surgery that would not allow her to have any more children, unless, Rahman al-Atslan, one has to have the surgery for health reasons. In other words, if the surgery is mandated not for its contraceptive effect, but the surgery is mandated, Rahman al-Atslan, for other health reasons, then obviously then it's not only permissible, but it's advocated. There's an in-between situation, which is, again, very, very severe, and again, it's important to be aware of it, that sometimes a situation can occur where we have the endometrial lining is unstable. So some doctors will suggest that to do a surgical procedure to remove, I'm talking about a menopausal woman, to have surgery done, not just to remove the endometrial lining, that those ablations are probably permissible. We're not sure how effective they are, but to have the uterus removed partially or entirely in order to avoid this demum. So that's something that, again, our initial position would be that we don't do that. That's usur. We would now, if we've exhausted all other possibilities, and the couple is having very serious issues in terms of being together, no, then it has to be raised al shulchan malach. We have to take it to one of the Gedolei Yisrael to determine that question. But it's a very, very severe question. So now we want to discuss some of the, I would call some of the hashkafa, quasi hashkaf halach issues that come up, and that is, let's say, is there a family size at which one can say, whatever, I'm 27, at Baruch Hashem I have 10 children, so actually no one in the room is included in that situation. So is there a point where I can say, all right, I have enough children? So in my thinking. So I don't see that as in other words, a couple is saying, Baruch Hashem, we're healthy, everybody's well, the children are well, but we have a certain vision of what a family size should be. So that I'm very concerned about. I don't think that's an accurate thing to, is it an eject button or is it lift up? Sorry. And I'll tell you that my approach and my mindset is very much shaped, and this is something where I think one cannot get away from one's own inclinations. And that personally, I'm very much shaped that over the years I spend a good deal of time with couples who are trying to have children. And for whatever circumstances, over the last probably 15, 20 years, so I don't think a week goes by that I'm not in some kind of discussion with a couple, whether it's an old friend, or whether it's a Talmud from Yeshiva, or it's from another place. I really don't think that a week goes by without having some kind of fertility question. And so I spent so much time that for me it's very hard to be liberal, so to speak, and easygoing in the area of contraceptives. In fact, I once had a very interesting situation with a couple that, and so I've shared this with some of you, that with a couple who had trouble having children. And Baruch Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu blessed them with children, and with the second child, I forget how many children. And then the couple had several children. They came to me and they said, "Can we talk about being a contraceptive?" Because Baruch Hashem, they had. I remember that they had waited for a very long time. I don't remember. And Baruch Hashem, they had children. So I said that personally, I was very torn over here. It was certainly a situation that if this was a couple who had never had trouble having children, so it was a situation we would certainly consider. The children were very close together. The mother was exhausted. She certainly fit the category of being maybe a chola, and we would say, all right, that's why Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us the chokhmah to figure out contraception for this kind of situation. And I didn't know whether the fact that we had davened for this couple, does that play a role? In there's a psak, there's a halacha. Halacha would say, this one's a candidate for contraception. On the other hand, I remember davening with this couple to have children, so can one respond that way? So I really was very, very torn. So I asked Rav Schechter at that time. So Rav Schechter said that he thinks it would not be a problem. And I asked him does one take one's personal relation with the Rabbeinu Shlom into account in defining this kind of a halachic discussion. So he said, no, that a person, one needn't be concerned about it. Why? Because people need different things at different times in their lives. Sometimes people need to ask for parnasa. Parnasa is going well, they need to ask for help. We have different bakashas. So at one point in one's life, our request from the Rabbeinu Shlom could be that we need to have children. She give us the blessing of children. And then there are times when the request from Kodesh Baruch Hu is to give us space and allow us to enjoy the children and wait to have some more. And then we had a discussion with David Cohen, one of the great proskim in Brooklyn, and a person who's also very involved, very extremely involved in this whole area. And I asked him as well. I said, I have this situation. Do I, how would Rav Cohen say? He said, of course you take this into account. Of course you have to speak to the couple. And if the couple spent, that's, of course one has to look at every part of life as a real relationship with the Rabbeinu Shalom. That if here I was spending time davening for a bracha, then it's not if I have a real relation with Rabbeinu Shalom and I feel close to Rabbeinu Shalom and I have a consciousness of him being involved in my life, so I can't just turn around and say right now let's turn things around. So these are two very different approaches, which I think are fascinating in terms of how one looks at the various shilas and the other things one has to take into account. And I think that in general, sometimes when Baruch Hashem, Kodesh Baruch Hu blesses us with families without having to worry about fertility, then we sometimes do take it for granted. That doesn't come so easy for so many people with increasing number. The Gemara says there are several daigas that people have in their lives. The Gemara says, everybody has a daiga of parnasa, everybody has a worry about parnasa. The Gemara says everybody has a daiga of marrying off their children. Everybody is concerned about these things. And then the Gemara says, and everybody has a daiga, has the concern of whether the children will have children. Gemara says when a person's children have children, that relieves a certain daiga, a certain worry that accompanies the person, making sure that being assured that one's children will have that bracha. So coming back to the question, is there a family size where a person can say, this is a nice size family? So I don't think so. A person shouldn't look, that's not a significant variable. Usually that variable is shaped based on how we grew up. Almost always, you'll take a poll, almost always a person will say, if you think, what is there, well, you just play a game, not for serious reasons, you just play a mind game. And you'll ask, what is the an ideal family size? It'll usually be one or plus or minus of what they grew up with. And very often we'll have a couple come together and we're having this discussion and simply asking, what did you grow up with? That often determines what is the envelope in which they consider. So I don't think that should be a variable at all. I think one has to move away from that kind of idea. We have to move away from the idea of this extreme sense of planning every detail of our lives. Is there an age after which a person can say, I'm concerned about having more children, I'm concerned for my own health, I'm concerned for the health of the children? So that is a very, very sensitive question. And I think it's a question that changes with time, in other words, with medical research. One of the Gedolim has gone on record that there is such a time when a person can say that based on medical concerns after a certain age that we would be concerned. But I'm again loath to discuss this publicly, to go on record with this, more than saying that there might be such a time for numerous reasons. Number one is that the time is probably beyond what many of us living in 2005 think. Many of us have this idea that already in the late 30s we're concerned about the health of the child. And again, this is something that has to be discussed with a physician, with a doctor. But I don't think that halacha would support that kind of an age. I think that halacha would be much more looking into the 40s before we would be. That's an important thing also, that we are sometimes, our culture has created certain numbers in our mind. And again, this is a decision has to be made together with the doctor, with medical science, with information, with the Rav. But conceptually, is there a time when a person can say that the medical information indicates that might not be I might be concerned about it? I think that that's correct. Again, I would not think that we should work with a magic number, because I think it's unfair to couples who want to have children after that that kind of a number. So that's more of an issue to be discussed with the physician, doing the research with the Rav, more on a private level. As well as the issue of the testing as one goes along. It also is something that I think is better for private discussions, but it's important to be aware that conceptually that would be an appropriate thing, or could be an appropriate thing if a person is has proclivities to do so, to say at one point I'm concerned about the health of the child, and again to consider how testing fits into that. Then the question that many people say, and with different levels of seriousness, is how does Parnassa play a role? Right? Usually people put it in terms of school tuition. That's what I mean, different levels of seriousness. How does Parnassa play a role in determining this? Again, I would think that Parnassa plays a role only in terms of the stress that Parnassa gives. In other words, if a family is doing well and they're able to live a reasonable life, right? And that may also sometimes be shaped inappropriately by expectations that we may have. But let's say a person lives in Bergenfield, Baruch Hashem, lives well from Tzenua, and doesn't have wild vacations every single year, and doesn't. So they're raising their children, and they're living in Baruch Hashem, they're making ends meet, and they're able to afford everything, maybe put a little bit of money aside. They obviously have health insurance, and they have life insurance. They have the things which society around us determines to be an important to have. So then one sits down with the accountant, and the accountant says everything's good, but the next one is what's going to rock the boat, right? So that's what I think. That I don't think we go along with it. I don't think we say, if the accountant says, how are you going to afford the next one, right? I don't think that is our approach. That's what we have bitachon, because Baruch Hu will provide for that child. If on the other hand the accountant says, I don't know how you're providing for the 6 kids you have already, right? If you said that we don't understand, if we're already feeling the pressure, the stress, and so then I can see that a couple may have a choice. I'm not saying a couple has to say that we can't have another child. No, not at all. The person has to be talking because Baruch will provide for that child as well. But if we're already feeling stress already, or again, one doesn't have to push oneself over the cliff, if one is on the cusp of feeling some kind of stress, so then that would be a reason to sit down and discuss it carefully, husband and wife together, and involve the Rav to discuss whether that's a reason to postpone, or it's a couple that's already, as Baruch Hashem, a number of children. But again, I think it's very important that it becomes an issue of stress, and that's why this can vary wildly. It can have two people with the exact same expenses, the exact same income, and everything is mamash the exact same, and one couple is just by personality, because the background is more nervous and feels a lot of stress. Another couple is, and they never balance their books, they never add up the numbers in the month, and it just works, it happens. So that's the person, everybody has to respond to their own, to the way they are. But the point of it is that we're not looking at the budget, we're looking at stress. We're looking at how a person reacts. That's the major issue over here. And there are some times when we would sit down and say, right now under a lot of stress, the avoda that we have to do is to work on ourselves not to be under so much stress. That might be the avoda, the way that one prepares. One may be preparing by taking folic acid and preparing, taking prenatal. And one has to prepare by working on oneself to increase one's sense of bitachon and the Kadosh Baruch Hu will take care of things. There is an interesting Gemara which relates directly to tuitions. The Gemara says that even though mizonosu shel adam ksuvin lo, that even though Kadosh Baruch Hu every Rosh Hashanah determines how much we're supposed to make, right, so that's important. Issue number one, Kadosh Baruch Hu makes a determination how much we're supposed to make. So next Rosh Hashanah, I have a new din. If I have another child, or if we're expecting another child, so Rosh Hashanah is a time when Kadosh Baruch Hu determines the mezainis, the parnasah for that family. But then the Gemara says chutz, except for there is things that are not part of the din of parnasah. One is hoitzois Shabbos v'yomtiv, what we spend for Shabbos and Yom Tov. And the other is, it saw as Bono Talmud Torah, what we spend on giving our children a Torah education. So for Shabbos and Yom Tov, I don't think it means that a person who usually has chicken, every Shabbos and Yom Tov can have venison, can have unusual food and say, Kadosh Baruch Hu should pick up the bill. Labu alive and eat parek, Kadosh Baruch Hu will take care of it. But if a person spends, but whatever one spends in Shabbos and Yom Tov, I think again within the envelope of what of Onik Shabbos, so Kadosh Baruch Hu picks up the tab, and that doesn't come from our chay, it doesn't come from our parnasa. That means that Kadosh Baruch Hu is taken care of. Either it takes care of with a raise, or that's where the bonus is from, or that's what different things come up when one finds funds, and that's the Kadosh Baruch Hu taking care of Eitzah Shabbos Yom Tov. The same thing with Eitzah is Bonifat Talmud Torah. So we often think that our community lives on a we are Baruch Hashem over in general are people who earn very, if we compare ourselves to the national averages, right? So our community Baruch Hashem is very, very high in what we're earning. So we often think, well, that's necessitated, right? If we want to send the kids to yeshivas, we have to earn much more. That's one way to look at it. There's another way to look at it, that because we're sending our kids to yeshivas, so Kadosh Baruch Hu is providing us with these kinds of parnosas. Kadosh Baruch Hu is the one who's determining. It's not that we're working and then deciding to spend our money on yeshiva education. It's because we're spending money on yeshiva education. Kadosh Baruch Hu says these people need to have stronger jobs and better jobs, and Kadosh Baruch Hu helps us find that. So that is the different ways of looking at it. There's even a shaila that somebody posed to Rav Zilberstein. And he said, he asked, I have known he was on a scholarship committee, he asks whether he can apply for a scholarship in the yeshiva. Kadosh Baruch Hu will pick up the tab, right? How can he apply for a scholarship that goes against the Gemara? Right? I'm afraid if the scholarship committees read the Gemara, they'll say he shouldn't be applying. So he said, no, that's after you apply for the scholarship. After you apply, and that how much does it cost for you to send your child to yeshiva? After you go through the scholarship committee and indicate how much you're earning, and they determine how much one should pay, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu picks up the tab after that. That's our mindset should be, in this area, our mindset should be that if there's a family that Baruch Hashem has many children, and therefore it's hard to come by with yeshiva tuitions, so again, this is not, yeshiva tuitions may not be entirely spent on Hatzos Bono Talmud Torah. That's why it's a little bit of, that one has to adjust in order to see how the Gemara works out. we probably spend much more on yeshiva tuition than just what it would cost to give a child a Torah education. But if Baruch Hashem, a family has the bracha of having many children, so then it's reasonable to say that the community should pick up part of the responsibility for that family. The family, Baruch Hashem, went through providing for Klal Yisrael children, more neshamas. So the family is going through all of the concerns and needs. The mother went through labor many times. The mother went through childbirth. The family went through raising these children, providing for the children. So the community should help out in providing education for the children. I don't think that these factors should reasonably play a role. But again, what plays a role is the stress that comes out as a result of these things. And this is, again, part of a much, much bigger picture. That one has to work on oneself, and one is always working on oneself. So again, as a sikkum, as a summary of these two shiurim, we first discussed issues of privi ribia, the mitzvah of having children, as we opened up this evening. We then discussed the second part of every conversation that relates to, every halakha conversation that relates to contraceptives. The first question is there a reason in this situation to postpone the mitzvah of Pirivivya, the mitzvah of Lesheves, to postpone Zerizos? That's part number one. Part number two, if it's determined that there is such a reason, so then is this reason enough to say, well, we should negotiate, is it that we're going to suggest a method that does not add on an additional halachic concern, or are we being asked to discuss a method that does add on an additional halachic concern? And then, once that's discussed, we can put them in order of halachic concern. I didn't discuss the IUD, the intrauterine device, which primarily, there are different kinds of IUDs, and they primarily get in the way of, it's not so clear from the literature, they primarily get in the way of, I think, implantation. It's not so clear exactly how they work. There are two different methods. There was one method that was very popular until the late 70s, I think, and then those were taken off the market for about 10 to 15 years because they cause infection. Apparently they're still around, which I'm surprised. But the new ones, I think are the copper ones, if I remember correctly, and they, Baruch Hashem, have already stood the test of at least probably 10, 15 years, at least in the open market, and probably were tested long before then, and do not cause some of the infections, do not cause the infections that the earlier ones were known to do. And that prevents implantation, probably. It's not clear. So that also is a method which does not get in the way of chibur, does not get in the way of relations. It's probably in the same category halachically as the pill. It's the downside is that it's a procedure to put it in, the procedure to take it out. That's the downside. The downside has to be checked every so often. Sometimes if it does not sit in the right place, it can cause some kind of staining. And then that has to be dealt with the physician. But again, that's the second part of the discussion is, can we use a method that does not introduce a new halakha concern, or are we going to be using a method that does introduce a new halakha concern that saw zera levatola, which means having relations in a less natural fashion, and then do the needs that are being raised, do they justify that? That's the two parts of every conversation. And then we close with some general comments. About how we have to we have to be sure that we are focused, and that's one of the roles that the halachic process provides for us, that we're focused on the issues, that we're focused on stress, we're focused on real concerns of health of the children, again, psychological health, physiological health. These are all very, very real issues, but we have to try to filter out the issues that we may have just picked up, and we may sort of absorb them without due filtering, due analysis. That doesn't mean that they should be dismissed. It just means that issues of age and of size and of parnasa, they all have to be thought through very, very carefully, and we have to can use this area of halacha to make sure that we're analyzing things carefully and thinking very carefully about it. And then by thinking carefully about it, we'll come to an accurate way in which to apply halacha. And again, the important thing is to keep in mind is that I know well understood and axiomatic to all of us, Baruch Hashem, that the blessing, the bracha of having children, is one that I think we've all seen enough to know, not to take it for granted, and that along with the bracha of having children, Kadosh Baruch Hu also provides the strength to raise the children and to have pleasure from the children, and Kadosh Baruch Hu provides the wherewithal in terms of parnasa, and so that the children will benefit from Baruch Hashem young and healthy parents. And again, this is as an introduction to give you an underpinning of what we think, that when these things come up in our own lives, so then we have to sit down and discuss them. Okay, thank you very much.